Has it, how many people are actually on 2015 already? Okay, all right. 2013. All right. Okay, good. So some of you, this is going to be, it's going to be like finding the cool tips you didn't know about, and some of you it'll be like, I wonder if I need to do this, and then I have to sell you to it. I got it. All right. My mission is clear.
Actually wondering, 2010.
I was afraid to ask. Oh. All right. So like, now that we've gone down that path,
Even before 2010.
Well, let me ask this one. VC6. Okay, so here's the deal. 3 weeks ago, me and Rayson, our test manager, were in China and Taiwan and going around and meeting with a bunch of customers and trying to get them to upgrade to 2015. Not so different than what I'm doing right now. And when we would go on there, we would see these like modern laptops, you know, like this thing here, which I love. Running visuals, C6, VC6. It screams. I mean, I'll tell you that it's really fast. Yeah. Running VC on Windows, VC6 on Windows XP. Yeah, that's a thing. Most of them were actually not developing on XP at least, so that was good. We'll talk more about XP in a few minutes. Don't worry, it's all good. Have you spoken here before? Nope. Okay. Okay, I'm going to break with tradition. I'm going to start on time, but that's about 1 minute from now, FYI. Are you full of energy?
Sleepy, but not too bad.
All right. You have to be full of energy for these. These people got up early to come see us do a spiel. All right. And I will, we'll try to get the slides up quickly so that you don't have to do the phone thing. And you'll hold me accountable to that, right? Okay. There's actually a bunch of really nice discussions on Reddit last night for Stefan's talk and Herb's talk and yeah, good stuff. The conference around the conference is super cool. Oh, okay, wow. So the clock is ticking and I'm gonna go then. Hi, my name is Steve Carroll. As we were discussing in the pre-show, I'm the new dev manager for Visual C++. This fine gentleman over here.
Yeah, I'll introduce myself. I'm Ivan Chokri. I'm the group program manager for C++ team. So hopefully today we'll talk about a little bit about what's new there and tell you more as well about where we're heading from a direction even afterwards. So from that, I'll let you kick on, Steve.
Right. So I'm going to do a bunch of slides to show new things. There's a bunch of demo in this. I'm going to go fast. If I go too fast, let me know. I have a lot of stuff I want to kind of jam into 40 minutes. I want to make sure that this is actually a broad tour. Whoa, what's going on? That's too fast. All right. So we've established. Think. Okay, no, seriously, why is it doing that? All right, so that's going to be fun. All right, to get started, I want to talk a little bit about what we're trying to accomplish as a team, just to motivate like the features that are in here and also the sort of future direction stuff that Ayman's going to talk about towards the end. We want Visual Studio to be the best IDE for every C++ developer, not just C++ developers on the Windows platform, although we still love you. In particular, we're trying to focus on making it a more welcoming environment for people doing open source development. Continuing on with that trend, we want to help make C++ the language for cross-platform development. I'm going to show you guys a bunch of stuff about doing Android development and iOS development inside Visual Studio. We have further and deeper ambitions in this direction, which we'll talk about later. C++ development is on the uptick. All of our telemetry tells us this. I don't know if you've read John Calab's book, YC++. There's some good data in there. But we get lots of telemetry streams that tell us that, yes, indeed, the number of C++ developers is increasing. And a lot of it is driven by cross-plat and need for high performance on little tiny supercomputers in our pockets. All right, great. So we believe that while C++ may not be known for its productivity as a language, that there are a lot of things that tools can do to make your life more productive. I'm going to show a lot of things in that area, and we'll continue to invest in that area. And finally, no intro should be complete without us talking a little bit about our mission on conformance. We have for a long time been behind on conformance. I'm going to go through in some detail all the work that we did in 2015 to help catch up. I want to talk, and then we'll talk about our desire to participate in the standards body to make the language better. I think you've seen some examples of that in this conference. And then, of course, we will stay caught up. All right, now I'm going to push the button and see if I can go only one slide forward. Okay. What? No, don't do that. All right, saving the best for first. I would like to start by talking about what is perhaps the best received new feature in Visual Studio 2013. And it's worth pointing out that I'm going to show you things in Visual Studio 2015 that are great for C++ developers, not just things that my team did. A lot of this is going to be me taking credit for other people's great work. This is an example of that. First, I'd like to start with my impression of the menu bar in Visual Studio 2013. File, edit, view, et cetera. However, we've fixed that, and in Visual Studio 2015, one of the most well-liked features is we have camel case, or the menu bar. So I simply stopped yelling at you. So, you know, months and months of development work at last. Yeah, yeah. That was totally a plea for applause, and I'm glad that you noticed that about me. I'm desperate for validation. Thank you. Saving the worst for second. All right, so this is kind of an anti-feature, so I thought I'd get it out of the way. I'm going to explain the why of this. When you go to install, we talked at the beginning, some of you have not yet gotten to Visual Studio 2015. When you go and do that, please, at the installation thing, select custom. Not typical. I know what you do is a typical day-to-day kind of thing, but in Visual Studio 2015, C++ does not install by default. It is not because C++ is not important or we stopped caring about it. It is because Visual Studio takes entirely too long to install for most people, and we are working our way through making it more modularized. It turns out that we were in a pretty good shape in terms of modularization of our modules, and so we were first. All you have to do, custom, set C++, and yes, I'm sorry. Okay. What? That's really going to be fun for the whole talk. All right, so this is things that are not new. These are things I hear all the time that are not true. Number one, you can still target XP in Visual Studio 2015. This causes poor Stefan T. Lawoai much angst. So, you know, please understand that that is actually in the product. You go into the platform toolkit thing, you drop it down, and you select the XP toolkit. It's always sad that we do that work, and then many people don't know. Also, at one point in the sort of CTP to RC timeframe, we talked about not having app local deployment for our CRT. We changed that. It's fine. Any way that you could have deployed your app with Visual Studio 2015 or 2013 is still available in Visual Studio 2015. Please don't think that those are no longer available. Okay, I'm going to do a bunch of demos of things that are sort of language agnostic, and you can't see what I'm doing. So I'm going to go in here and duplicate. All right, good, beautiful. All right, first thing I want to show you are some simple, like IDE-wide kinds of things. One of them is may seem silly, but like let's imagine you are in a large auditorium and have to be able to make sure that people can read the code that you have. There are a number of touchscreen enhancements inside Visual Studio 2015, and if you have a laptop with touch, you can do pinch to zoom. No hands on my trackpad, I promise. All the scroll bars are actually lit up so that they work well with touch. This really does actually come in handy in some scenarios. Another one I want to show you really quick, which is language agnostics, is called manage window layouts or apply window layouts. You can set the windows any way you like them and then quickly switch between them. I'm going to show you an example here. I have on mine sort of like what I call laptop mode and docked mode, because I use this laptop for whatever development I actually do as a pointy-haired manager. And so when I'm in laptop mode, I want to have the size of my code take up as much of the screen as possible, so I smooth out the Solution Explorer over to the right there and make sure I give as much as I want to the code itself. Likewise, you know, when I'm docked, I want to have that back. And you can basically put any kind of arrangement of windows, save it, and then quickly apply it. So there's a lot of uses for this. If you've used like perspectives inside of Eclipse, this is a kind of a powerful feature for allowing you to do those things. Another thing I want to show really quick, when you install Visual Studio and you go and you click custom, one of the things that you can do is toss in the GitHub extensions. And what that allows you to do is, who has a GitHub account? Yeah, okay, so good. I figured you guys might want to use this. If you go in here and you click clone, I've got this already wired up to my GitHub account, and you can see right here I've got the JSON 11 thing, and I click clone with my finger, and it will go ahead, and as you can see, I've already done that, so it won't work. And we have full Git integration, Visual Studio development itself we're now doing on top of Git. And so this is some great way to do what I was saying earlier about making it easier to do open source development inside Visual Studio. So I encourage you to go check that out. Peek at my slides. Ah, send a smile. So this thing. Yeah, I know, it's not much. It's a picture of a smiley face. But I want to actually like assure you that this is a situation where there's another person sitting on the other side of this. I literally got yelled at by a VP yesterday for not having looked at this recently enough. So please, we're getting excellent feedback from the community on this. We're taking it very seriously. If you're seeing bugs, if you're seeing other issues inside Visual Studio, if you just want to send us a suggestion, this is a really lightweight way of not having to file a connect bug, and we'll get that information, and we will be looking for them. I want to show you Sendefrown for a second. So you can say, you know, what happened here, Steve? You know, broken, and actually give us some details, because we'll get this string. But then when you click this, there's a number of record more info about these, and I want to really encourage you to do this when you go and do the bugs. It makes them much more actionable for us and easier for us to go and fix your issues. So for instance, you can replay the crash, get the dump, and then have it upload to us. You can report performance problems, and we'll get a profile. It's really helpful. We'd really appreciate it if you would use this if you're seeing nastiness. We're updating all the time, as you know, so we have lots of opportunities to fix your bugs. Please, by all means, let us know about them. Okay, so from that, I want to switch in to start talking about productivity features in the IDE. I'm going to show you both my favorite C++ new language feature and my new favorite refactor in the tool all at once. As you can see, this string is obnoxious. It's really long. It has slash n's and slash t1's in it. We've tried to add a bunch of new refactorings inside of Visual Studio, and I'm going to do one right now. You see the little light bulb? If you hit control period, it brings up possible fixes for that line of code next to the light bulb. I'm going to do convert to raw string literal. Uses the capital R thing. Ah, so much nicer. Easier to read, better in your code. So this is like lots of these little tiny refactors can clean up code and make things much nicer. This next one, I've helpfully left myself a comment to remind me that this is a gallery extension that needs to be done, but it's available up on VS Gallery, which if you've not done before, you can get to from extensions and updates in the tools window. And this one is called extract function or extract method in the gallery if you search for it. What it allows you to do is, like, let's imagine you really, really, really like oring ints together, and so you want to extract this function out so it can be used in other places. I right-clicked, I select quick actions, and I have extract function as one of my choices. If I click on that, I can give it a name, which I'll call or all the ints. And then for some reason, the .h file fell out of the project. Don't worry about it. Trust me, it works. No, it does. I will fix it. I screwed this up. It's the stereotypical do the demo beforehand, thereby screwing up the demo. Extract function, new function seems like a fine name, and then it pulls it out, puts the name of the function into the header, a declaration into the header file, and then plops it in the middle of the function so that you can use it, call it from other places. And here's new function. Here is a function with a terrible name. It is called, this is a terrible name for a function. This is another very quick, easy to use refactoring available in the tool. We can right click on here, choose rename or control RR. And I'm going to give it a much better name. And now if I click preview, I'll get the ability to, first it will use a very precise IntelliSense-based way of identifying all the places where it's used. This is not just find in files. This is actually using smarts to identify the places where it's being used. And I can see it gets all the refs and the uses, but it also gives me the option of finding it in any comment string and replacing it there, or in actual strings themselves. And then I can make fine-grained control of them and hit apply and have it fixed. And voila, a much better name. Okay, continuing on with new refactorings in 2015. We have one for that we call move declaration definition, which will allow me to push this from the CPP file to the header file or from the header file to the CPP file. The cool thing about this is it will do it in the little peek window. If you've never seen it before, the idea behind the peek window is we want to kind of keep you code focused. We want to drop you into a place and let you stay there. And so, for instance, at this point, I can go and make this an inline function directly, and I never have to worry about this, and I can just dismiss it when I'm done. So that's that. I'm going to show you a couple more. Here's an abstract base class. It has some pure virtual kinds of things. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to right-click on the abstract base class, and I have quick actions again. And what I can do is quickly implement all the pure virtuals for base, my abstract base class. Save you some typing, not have to override each of those. And again, it immediately pops up the peek window if you want to do some editing in the place where it's inserted them. But it's added the virtual overrides into both the header file and the class file. Likewise, if you're speccing out a class and you want to quickly generate stub functions, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to uncomment those lines, pretend I just wrote them. Now I can right-click, quick actions, create definition, and what it will do is it will create definitions, please. It will actually generate those into the CPP file so that then you can continue on with your work and it'll build and you have a stub implementation. So those are some new refactorings inside Visual Studio 2015. Peeking at my slides one more time. We rename, extract, yes, yes, yes. Single file IntelliSense. All right, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to close my solution. And I'm going to create a new file. Single file IntelliSense is part of our push in general to make it much easier to use Visual Studio in a place where you don't necessarily have a project file. We want to make it so that you can go in and file new a CPP file and have it mostly just work. So if I go in here and I go, something funny with my mouse, pound include vector using namespace standard. I very quickly actually get IntelliSense. What we're doing behind this behind the scenes is creating a sort of empty project that has all of the basic include files set up. This also works for if you like go onto GitHub using the GitHub extension, download some code, and you just want to pop up one CPP file and look through it. You can do it that way. This is really great for just like very quick IntelliSense on code that doesn't yet build in Visual Studio. And this is an area where we'll continue to make it better. So that's single file IntelliSense. All right, back to the finicky. Okay. Another really useful new feature is simplified template IntelliSense. This is fit and finish kind of thing, but if in Visual Studio 2013, if you hover over the after the parentheses for a W string, you get something that it actually doesn't even fit on the screen, right? It actually goes off to the side. And all you wanted to know was what were the parameter names and what is the template? And now we've done some heuristics in order to make that better. So I hope that that should just be a light up in your day-to-day work. You should see improvements. Yes, I actually did spend time going through the XKCD license page to make sure I could use the thing. I can, yeah, ooh, my favorite XKCD comic. One of the things that we think we can do to make C++ more productive that just plain old works is tune the edit, compile, debug cycle. Let's face it, every day we spend way more time making small tweaks and debugging, and we want that cycle to be really tight. As I said before, I used to be the dev manager for the debugger, and what I always learned was, you know, people say they write code all day if they talk to grandma, right? But it's not really true. What you do all day is fix. You spend 5 minutes writing code, and then you know the rest of the day trying to make it work. And so what we have done is tried to focus on build throughput for incremental builds in this release. And so we went through the list of things that were blocking us from doing a great job on incremental builds and tried to fix them one by one. Some of the things are kind of global. Like one of the things we found was some inefficiencies in our template processing that we fixed, and that actually made a big difference that works in full builds and incremental builds. But we also found that we were mostly blocked on linker and on PDB generation. Those were the two big bottlenecks for our build throughput. So we created the /debug/fast-link switch. This basically allows it to, rather than having to wait at the end and conglomerate all the PDBs, there are links to the sub-PDBs that get generated. So that should make a big difference. It's not on by default. It's available in the project properties. It conflicted with another feature. So by all means, if you're not seeing the gains that I want you to see in your incremental build, go in and set that switch in the linker flags, /debug/fast-link. Also, the linker is now capable of doing incremental links for static libraries. This is actually what's largely to thanks for the gigantic increase in Connect Sports Rivals. The Connect Sports Rivals team came to us and said, hey, every time we make a change and rebuild, it takes 958 seconds. And we're like, that ain't right. So we really dug into that, and we managed to get it down to basically 7% of what it used to be. In addition, we've made several improvements to incremental LTCG. LTCG is link time code generation, or what our Clang friends call link time optimizations, LTO. If you've tried this in the past and rejected it because it was too slow, please try it again. We've made incremental LTCG much faster. It should work better. Let me know if it doesn't. And actually, that's a meta point on this whole slide. We want to know if you're seeing unusual build things. If you go and you install this and you're not seeing any improvements in incremental link, please let us know. We've also published a auto PCH tool up on the gallery that you can use to go and look through your precompiled headers and make sure it's well targeted. It goes and checks for things like, you know, hey, you're compiling this header file a bunch of times, why don't you move it into the PCH file? And of course, there's just a bunch of algorithmic improvements across the tools, and also Pogo builds and instrumentation has been significantly improved. So, you know, I don't expect everybody to go 97% faster, but in incremental builds, you should see significant improvement, and if you don't, let me know. Full builds, you can see we also saw some improvements based on our improvements to template processing. And we're going to keep going on this in the updates. Okay, diagnostics. So back one more thing on productivity. I want to show you some new diagnostics features inside Visual Studio. So I'm going to open up a Famicom tracker. I got to do that again. All right, you're in charge of that. You can see me now. Great. Back to the start page where I had all these pinned. Famicom tracker. Open. All right, so I'm going to launch the app. All right, so there are a bunch of new diagnostics tools inside Visual Studio. You can see one popping up right here. This is the diagnostics tools window. The idea here is to get you live information about your application while it's running. So for instance, you can see I've got the CPU utilization, which is quite low because I'm not touching it really. You can see there's little tiny lines at the bottom. So let's say that we were getting reports in our Famicom music tracker application that we got leaks. So here I'm going to do is I'm going to make this, you can see the spike in the memory when I do this, right? Right. Okay, great. So now I've got that report and I can see right in there. So let's say I want to do something about that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to launch it under the debugger. Just the plain old debugger, no special profilers or anything. And in theory, I'm going to hit a, oops, didn't hit my breakpoint. Need to go back in. Debug, oops, breakpoints. No, the breakpoints are gone. Let's see if I can remember where it is. Doesn't matter. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a baseline. I'm going to cause the leak to happen again. And we'll see if we can find it. I'm way off script right now, guys. OK. So I took a snapshot. While this is executing, that was weird. OK, good. While this is executing, what we're actually tracking is every allocation. It's and deallocation, its size, its type, and its allocation stack. The idea being that we want you to be able to go and do memory investigations of where the changes are coming from. So you can see here it says plus 786 kilobytes. So I'm going to go here, I'm going to click on that, and it's going to take me over here to my heap view. And I can see that there is a long array, I should say there are two long arrays, of total size of 400 kilobytes that were created, that were responsible for that increase in process memory. So I'm going to go in here, I'm going to drill into that. I can see I've got two instances of this. Now remember, I'm attached as a debugger. What that allows me to do is have, first of all, really fine-grained control of where I take those snapshots. So for instance, if my breakpoints had been set properly, I would have been able to stop at an exact line I wanted to take the before snapshot and then run to a different line where I wanted to take the after snapshot. But then once I have that, I can look at that instance in memory, and I can also get the allocation stack that inserted that. Ah, there's my function. So if I go to insert pane, I can get to the exact line where that was allocated. And I can actually put the breakpoints that are missing back into the function, which is great. And so that's how you can very quickly investigate leaks and also the overall memory usage of your application. You can compare snapshots, but you can also just go in, if I click on simply heap size, it will take me to a view where we're not comparing against the baseline, and we can just see what are all of the things that are currently in the heap, and still my long longs are the highest thing, and the next highest thing is this. You can we have a stack view so that you can actually navigate the stack and see which call tree is the most allocating one. So this is a very useful feature. We get feedback all the time that it's too hard to do memory tools, and so this is our take at that. Very quickly, the exception settings window has been completely revamped. It is no longer a modal dialog, which is huge. You can go in here and fine-grained selections on the types of exceptions you want to break on. So if you want to skip all the standard exceptions or break on all the standard exceptions, you just modify this settings dialog. One last thing I want to show, now that I've got my breakpoints back, is what we call perf tips. I'm not sure if you noticed them during any of my demos, but there's very small, I'm going to hit the breakpoint this time. Yay! And as you saw, I also set another breakpoint at the end of this. I used to own the Visual Studio Profiler for a lot of years. And we always had trouble getting people to use the tool. Profilers, oh, it's such an expert level tool. No matter how much we tried to make it simpler, we always had trouble getting people to actually do profiling. What inevitably people would do is go into the beginning of a function and write, yes, int a equals, get timestamp, and then at the end, b equals get timestamp, and then the magical b minus a. And so we just came, eventually, why don't we just give them what they want? And that's what this feature does. When I run to the second breakpoint, you can see what it actually did was, can you read that? Probably not. It says less than or equal to 39 milliseconds elapsed. We're actually timing between every step and every breakpoint so that you can find places where you can do those like quick investigations. Yes, this works under release mode, and yes, it also subtracts out any overhead the debugger itself has added. The heuristics are pretty good. We think it's pretty accurate. And all that stuff shows up in here. You can see my breakpoints hit, and you can use this listings to navigate through the places in source that you've been recently. One last thing in my Diag thing, and then I'm going to move back to the slides. NatViz, I think, is part of the secret sauce of our debugger. NatViz is a format. Yeah, sure, whatever. The NatViz format is totally public. It's what we use to make standard vector look like a vector instead of what poor Stefan has to deal with as an implementer. We do that using a completely documented, well, mostly documented format for native visualizations. And now what we're doing is if you add a .NatViz file to your project and you use the schema and edit it up and make it all nice the way you want your own objects to be done, we'll actually take that NatViz information, stick it into the PDB, and anybody who then goes and uses the debugger will get that view of the object. So you can go and be a hero for your company. Go and take your nastiest, gnarliest type, put a NatViz in there, stick it in the project so it builds, and suddenly debugging for every single person in your org gets better. It's totally worth it. If you have any questions, grab me afterwards. Okay. And I'm not going to demo it, but we completely rewrote Edit and Continue. It's completely new. It works for 64-bit now as well as 32-bit. It should be much more reliable. If it's not, send a frown. Okay, let's talk about cross-plat. How am I doing on time? Halfway. Okay. We went and we got the 100 top apps from the Android Play Store, and we figured out, and we cracked them, and we said, which ones of these have native code in them? A lot of these you'd expect, like Facebook has some native code in it, Minecraft has some native code, a lot of games have native code in it. Some of these are a little more surprising. I was surprised to see Tinder there. But you've got all of these applications using C++. Why? Well, C++ is the common denominator. You can get a full native experience on your application. You get complete access to the device's SDK, not some library that you have to worry about is this the lowest common denominator. You've got code reuse, you can have code shared between the different, and better performance, and especially with safe C++, security. So let's talk about architecting your app. We're seeing more and more teams go ahead and architect their applications like this. For instance, the Office team has been structured so that you have a shared C++ backend, and then platform-specific UI and what we call platform abstraction layer code that is specific. But in the case of PowerPoint, for example, they've managed to get to the point, which they talked about it last year, CPPCon, where they have like 97% of the code in PowerPoint is one big shared library that they use on both Android and iOS and Windows. But this is not just us. The Skype app is the same. The Bing Maps app is the same. Dropbox did a talk on this last year, and I think they had another talk this year about their Ginny. So I'm going to just put this into the IDE really quickly, because I find that it helps really help people understand once you see the way the solutions are laid out. So I'm going to go in here. I'm going to open up a simple cube rotating demo. And while it's loading, I want to show you this. This is our Android emulator. We are super duper serious about this cross-platform mobile development stuff. Enough so that we went and we wrote our own emulator. It's super fast. It's fully featured. It's got accelerometer support. You can come in here and do this. You can use your touchscreen for it too. We got location support, network support. The startup is fast. You can emulate batteries. You can take screenshots, emulate the camera, emulate an SD card. It's a fully functional thing. If you want, you can even use this with Android Studio. Like, it just wires up to ADB and all's well. So here we are inside the app. And so let me do a window layout. So what you can see here is I've got a library that's shared, and two application heads on this. This uses the same shared project stuff that we do for universal applications, so it should look at least a little familiar if you've done any recent Windows work. So we've got an Android application. This is like basically a packaging project, and this is the native activity, which is an Android concept, which is like where main.cpp lives. And this is a Windows Universal, Windows 10 application that has that same shared library. So we have heads on the shared library. For instance, if you come in here and you open up the properties, you can see that here we're building with Clang 3.6, but we also give you the ability to build your Android application with GCC 4.9. We're just using the underlying NDK stuff here, and we use the underlying NDK build stuff as well. You can choose the STL implementation you want. You can see that this will build a .a file on Android. Likewise in Windows Universal. But the shared is actually the magic. This is where the shared code is. There's not much shared code in this one. But I wanted to show was, if you take a look at simple.renderer, what we have is per platform IntelliSense. So like, here's a simple way of looking at it. I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna go open document. Now if you notice up here, I'm looking at it through the lens of OpenGL ES App 10 Android.staticlib. So when I go to open document on this, it's gonna go and it's gonna grab the one from the NDK. All of the definitions flow from there. It'll match whatever IntelliSense you get for the STL will be based on the one that ships with the NDK. And likewise, if you go here and you go to Windows and then you do the same thing to go to the open the document for vector, it'll take us to a more familiar one. And so this is true of IntelliSense. You get exactly what you're expecting. It's actually even emulating under the covers the differences between MSVC and Clang. Even when it comes to things like languages, we actually throw a switch in IntelliSense that tells us to emulate Clang versus emulate MSVC. So that's sort of the high level on cross-platform. Okay, great. So in Android, we support KitKat and Lollipop. We have inside the emulator, we support OpenGL ES 2.0. It does multi-touch. I showed you the camera and Wi-Fi and network simulation stuff. Oh, you mean push the button? Okay. Kind of didn't want to. You can debug directly from Visual Studio. And the line that I have bolded, I really want to call out here, which is that if you have an APK, I actually figured out what it's doing. It's running the rehearsal timings from before. Anyways, it means I'm going too slow. you can take an APK, the packaging thing. You're killing me, Outlook. And actually go and just launch just that. You can like do project open on the APK and launch it. So even if you never want to build, but you just want to use our debugger, just like you can only use our emulator, there are all of those entry points. We're happy to have you as a customer. Just use the part that makes sense for you. We've heard a number of times that Android, the debugging is very fast and very reliable. For folks, we're using it internally inside Visual Studio. Inside of Microsoft, we have many big teams using it, including the Bing Maps team is on it. Or am I allowed to say? Minecraft uses it. iOS feature set's a little bit less there. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually stop this so that I don't have to fight it anymore, and you guys are going to look at slide sorter view because it's going to be easier for us to do this talk. That's what I call quick fix engineering. Great. All right. iOS, we have support 6, 7, and 8. You can debug from Visual Studio. You do need a Mac because of licensing. You can still do debug against a device and the iOS emulator on the Mac. Windows 10 platform development, completely supported in Visual Studio, uses that same shared project idea. I'm just going to go quickly to conformance. All right, let's talk about conformance. We've made a ton of progress on conformance in Visual Studio 2015. I put all these things on the slide not because I'm going to go through them in detail. I just wanted to kind of give a sense of these are just the ones that are new from Visual Studio 2013. We've made a ton of progress. You can see there's stuff in there from C++ 14. There's even stuff up there from C++ 11, maybe, like our await support. You can see there's a couple of things that we're going to even clean up a little bit for update one, improved const expert support, await will get better. So I actually want to look at this through the lens of what's still missing. That's it. That's the complete, as far as I know, list of language conformance features of things that are missing. We are working right now feverishly on making sure that we can get expressions fine. That will get us to the end of C++ 11. We will have full C++ 11 support as soon as we complete expressions fine. In ye olden times, we would have made you wait until the next version of Visual Studio for that. Loud and clear feedback that is, you know, if we can keep the breaking changes to zero, that there's strong preference for us to be able to roll out these improvements. So you'll see improvements to expressions fine in update one. It's already a lot better, but we'll keep working through the updates until we get it right. I wanted to give you some flavor of the relative levels of difficulty or size of the remaining features. Obviously, generalized const expert is a really, really big language feature, and you shouldn't expect us to have that in update one, for instance, but we will be working on it soon. NSDMIs for aggregates, which is a C++ 14 feature we don't have, is a small one. That one you'll get sooner rather than later. And variable templates is small, and I think John is excited about checking that one in, right? Two-phase lookup is hard. We will break the universe if we just, you know, mindlessly went in and fixed that. We are continue to work on our rejuvenation of the compiler source base in order to make it more amenable to these types of things. I'm not saying no, I'm just saying that that's further down the line. And C99 preprocessor is still missing. We will get these things. Let's talk about libraries. This one, I didn't even want to make a slide that had all the new stuff in it, because Stefan's got a really good blog post, and frankly, it's a lot. Let's just talk about what's missing. It's these things. C++ 14, we need Sfine before we can do this one. And then there are two new C++ 17 things that we'll get in as soon as we can. Okay? Library updates. Universal CRT. CRT is now an OS component. It ships, it's still supported down to XP. Did I mention XP is still supported? We will never break changes against the CRT again. It is a stable OS component. This will not be there are some refactorings that went into this one, so there are some incompatibilities. They're mostly manageable, and from then on, no more breaking changes. We did actually make a small MFC improvement who has MFC app? All right, good. Hey, how would you like auto resize for dialogues? Because that's a new update for MFC in there. There was enough noise about us needing to make some small edits that we went and did that one. If there are things like that, you guys can come and yell at me later. Up on CodePlex, we have Parallel STL implementation, as well as the Casablanca C++ REST SDK, and you can see we added some features there. I know I'm running a minute or two late, but I'm almost there. Introducing Clang C2. Jim did a talk on this on Monday. I'm not going to go through a ton of detail on this. We took the Clang front end and hooked it up to the Microsoft back end. We're going to ship this in an update. Why did we do this? We want you to be able to use the same front end to reduce the overhead of bringing cross-platform libraries and code to Windows. Basically, my thing at the beginning about us making it much easier to do cross-platform development, this is totally on message for that. By doing it the way we're doing it, it allows us to bring you no compromises debugging, and it allows you to link that with our existing libraries. And I just want to make sure I'm absolutely clear on this. And no, that doesn't mean the code that you have that only works with our front end is now abandoned. We continue to make, as you saw on the previous slide, I continue to make investments on our existing front end. Hey, we've been, the message that we've given you guys on C has been messy, I find. Whenever we post basically any blog post, the first piece of feedback is, fix C! And message heard. We care about C. As we went to go prep for the Clang C2 demo, it was hard for me to find open source libraries where we didn't have enough C99 support to compile them. I actually didn't find any. If you know one, let me know. What? FFmpeg works. Yeah, FFmpeg works. I couldn't, libav codec, yeah, all good. So these are the things that are missing. We demoed on Monday the ability to use Clang C2 to do this. We did a Mandelbrot set thing with a bunch of underscore complex in it. Yes, C is coming. We do a lot of work for graphics developers. I'm gonna skip this for now. I just wanna make a couple of quick points about vectorization. We have, Jim covered this in his talk. These are what we call our compile and smile features. We do a lot of work in the backend optimizations to make sure that all you have to do is recompile and get some benefits. As you can see, we've done some work on vectorization of loops to take into account control flow and still being able to vectorize in the presence of that. That sped up Black-Scholes 300% in our measurements. So if you want to make money on Wall Street, that's awesome. The stall forward avoidance by doing a better job with standard complex floats and standard complex doubles has sped up quaternion multiplication code and FFTs by a bunch. Again, if these numerical methods matter to you, by all means, grab Visual Studio 2015. Bit test merging, sometimes this gets a laugh. People are like, really, seriously, just that? But it actually, this pops in code all the time. And indeed, I was happy to find after I did this talk in front of my own team at one point, one of the developers on the compiler team went and said, yeah, this actually fires all over the compiler front end as well. So that was good. You know, what can you do for me, right? And loop if unswitching, which is finding invariant conditions inside source code and then moving them outside the loop. Again, you'd say, why would you write that code? Well, inliners make that happen. Improved code gen of standard min-max, lots of things, particularly in STL constructs. So go ahead and recompile and smile. And at this point, I'm going to let this poor guy talk.
Okay. So Steve covered a little bit of what we have in 2015. I wanted to make sure we are very transparent with you where we're heading as well. What's next, whether it's 2017, 16, or even the updates itself that we're going to come and see. The first one I wanted to cover is actually can you guys all hear me? Okay. So the first one is we used to release what we call the CTP for some of the conformance features we're working at, and we used to get it out there as a side-by-side, the existing compiler, and we only roll it into the main product in the next major version of VS. That's changing. We're actually going to roll it in VS 2015. So the updates itself will contain the newer features, the compiler features, specifically standard conformance ones, which are fully supported in everything. So you don't have to wait to the next major version of VS. It's just similar of the updates part, which includes some of the stuff we're working on right now, like the Clang C2, we're aiming to have that as one of the updates, hopefully sometime this November. Modulus and Gabby has spoken about it. Await, Gore is here as well. That's part of the work that we're going to more optimize the await. The interesting part here, we are obligated though still, is if you installed VS 2015, and then you installed one of the updates, your existing code has to work as expected. So there's not going to be any breaking changes. So some of the features will be an opt-in in most cases. But it's still there, fully supported. One of the parts as well is that's interesting is from build lab scenarios and others, and I want to mention this is the last one. So we've heard lots of feedback about, do I have to install VS to just use the compiler? And what we're doing right now, we're thinking about, and we're actually almost close to releasing it, and hopefully we have good news in some time in November, what we call a builds queue. So basically, you don't have to install VS, you're going to provide a way of just a standalone queue, just install the MSI, you get just the compiler and MS build, and you can just build from the command line. You don't have to install the whole VS itself. Yep. Oh, that's a thing.
You'll miss the installer when it's gone.
Yes. And it's the same bits that's been in the major one. You can update it as well on a quarterly basis, the same concept. You just don't have to install it. Part of it is, believe it or not, we've heard from it, from the Python guys, a word from it from the build lab scenario to run it in your build labs, and as well some of the developers itself. We're going to continue what Steve spoke about in code refactoring, whether that's actually in the VS gallery itself or it's actually built in the product as part of the updates as well. So we can keep improving there. The other part as well is build time improvements. I think Steve spoke about the incremental build scenario. That one we focused on 2015. We're still going to be updates there, but we're going to start focusing as well on the full build scenario as well. How do we actually speed the full build and not just the incremental one? That could be through us and through partnerships as well with other existing folks. So we'll do that and as well as part of the November update. So we're going to have more details. I think one of the key parts here is we'll be more transparent about what we're doing. We'll talk about it in public and everything. The negative part of it, in some cases, we'll be too transparent that we might actually not hit the project in the time that we wanted to, but we'll keep you updated as well of what's happening there. The other part as well is we have early thoughts here, and we would love to talk to you about it as well. we will continue. Right now, we started investment into the cross-platform mobile, which is Android, iOS, and Windows as well. We're hitting as well the other platform as well, not Windows, and we're going to start thinking about the IoT scenarios and Linux as well, how to target those kind from Visual Studio. We've heard major pains, for example, from Linux developers, and if you're a Linux developer, just raise your hand. Right, big number. And one of the major pain points we've heard about is remote debugging. Can I debug using VS and debug on a Linux? And it's actually an area that we're actually investing in right now. We're investigating it. We're actually building a prototype right now. We hope to see show you something very soon. And once we have it, we will as well roll it as part of the VS updates. You don't have to wait for major updates as well. And for the other parts as well, is you guys have heard of VS Code? Okay. We are thinking about, and yeah, he's going to explain it now. right now, all the support that's in VS Code is just for C++. It's just basically syntax colorization. We are investigating right now what does it mean to support C++ development in VS Code. So we would love to hear your feedback about it right now, because we're actively engaging right now in that area. I guess I covered my stuff quickly. So we're probably open for questions right now. Yeah, we have 12 minutes, so it's good.
Zach. No, as far as I know, everything I showed is in community. Yes.
Yes. More refactoring is coming soon. And that one's on our radar for sure. Yeah.
I was gonna say, this one's definitely in one of the parts here. Okay. So we'll repeat the question. Is there a way of actually updating the signature? It's not right now in VS 2015, but it's actually one of the high parts which we're working on as being one of the updates.
And the other question was, is everything I showed in only in some higher level SKU? No, it's all in community. Yep. Restrictions on XP. I'm looking at Stefan. You hurt Stefan. You're physically harming Stefan. But no, as far as we know, that it should
I think
be complete.
No restrictions. I mean, it's not a design time platform. It's a runtime target.
Yeah. Don't run Visual Studio on XP. So there have been many changes. If there was a restriction in 2013, it rolled forward, basically.
I would love to hear about what kind of restrictions were there.
That wouldn't surprise me if code analysis wasn't in there. Code analysis rules should mostly be the same on the other one, so flip it over and rebuild. Sorry about that, though.
Go ahead.
Testing tools. Made the question.
So yeah, the question is, what kind of improvements have been for testing tools for C++?
I don't think there's been a major investment in that area.
Not that much major, as being honest. But still, we'd love to hear about what the other tools you're using as well in that.
I was going to say, like, does anybody use the MS test stuff in the product? Yeah. Okay. I think we don't. We personally don't pay enough attention to that. So that's really interesting. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. The stuff that's, so the question was, is the old profiler still in the product? Yes, it is. And you get to it the same way. And there's even, I think, a lot of improvements inside the individual tools of it. I just didn't show them today. We didn't take anything away. We just sort of revamped the UI. Yep. Yeah. The refactorings do profiling is Windows only right now.
For the Clang C2 tool chain.
Clang C2,
correct?
You mean?
Yes, because the idea is, and that's one of the reasons we actually hooked it to the Clang C2, because our backend is responsible for all this format that are recognized by our profiler.
We still have some testing work to do in that space, but we don't see a reason.
That is the goal, though.
Yeah. Kostya. So the question is the heap profiler accessible from the command line? Is IOPA here? No. I don't think so. But that, I'm guessing the next question would be, well, could it be, right? Yeah. One of the things that's nice about it, though, just one of the reasons why it's designed the way it is because of the fact that you can use the debugger to have that fine grain level of control. It's integrated into the debugger, and so we're not really a command line debugger either. So, yes. Question in the back. Okay, so the question was, have there been any improvements to IntelliSense? The answer is yes, and indeed, one of the slides that Ayman said is that we've got what we think is a pretty big one coming in update, but there were a bunch of things that we did. What we did is we used the Unreal 4 engine code base in order to tune IntelliSense for scale, and we got some pretty big wins there, so I would ask that you try it out. This is another one of those examples where we really, really want to focus on making that better. We know that sometimes we run into things at scale, but to be honest, we don't always run into things at scale. It's very code-base dependent. So please, by all means, you know, I'm S. Carroll at Microsoft, two R's, two L's, you can't see that, but two R's, two L's, a C, I don't know. and let us know, we'll grab profiles. We've been working on that hard lately. Question here. I don't think we have any extensibility at that point. We track a number of right, yeah, what was the question? The question was, it's clear we're doing free and delete level and malloc stuff. Yeah, Stefan, is that an answer? This sounds like a good topic for a blog post, I guess is gonna be my answer to that, which is, yeah, by all means, try it out, give us feedback. It's completely new, there are updates to it coming in the update, but yeah, I'm not 100% aware of that. We are definitely doing all sorts of work across the chain to do that. There's information spit into the PDB about where the allocations are and their types in order to make it better. So yeah, by all means, shoot me a mail. Question. I don't want to say we've hit every possible user scenario that you can do with GFlags. Question is, have I freed him from the tyranny of GFlags?
I think it should reduce it.
It should definitely reduce your need to use it. So you know. Yes?
Timeline for update one yet. Okay, I'm going to say.
Ending in R.
Yes. Usually it's every 3 months. That's what we're targeting as updates. So it's the range of around the November timeframe. So that's the goal, at least right now.
We want to have a happy Christmas. Right?
Yeah. we're working hard to make it happen in November.
Okay. So. Uh-huh. That's a good question. So the question was, if we override the NatViz file by sticking it in the project, is it possible for somebody else to fight them? I don't know who would win in a battle between the NatViz folder and the PDB. I would imagine the PDB wins, and so if you want that scenario, you know, stick with the ask people to copy it into the file, or maybe even like a post-build step that copies it there. I don't know, I'm just thinking out of the top of my head. I don't know offhand, though. Oh, here's a question. No, that stuff is Windows. Oh, so the question was, if I'm doing cross-platform development, can I use the Heap tool? The answer is the Heap tool is Windows only right now. Don't get me wrong, we've been working on the cross-plat stuff, not actually that much amount of time. I think realistically we've been working on it about a year. We want to get to a place where everything's A+, right? And so those things are on our map, but today the really advanced debugging and diagnostic stuff
is Windows
only. It will
work for the Windows parts.
Yeah.
Cross-plat.
Yeah, if you're doing the you can profile the Windows part of the cross-plat, that will work, but you can't profile on
Android or the iOS one.
I'm not saying you can't do that. You just have to use the Android-specific tools for doing it, right? Yeah. There's a question in the back. I think Eric did some work with the WinDBG guys to make it support NatViz, I think. I'm going to go with 70% sure yes. So try that out, and We have a good relationship with the Windows debugger team, and so if it doesn't, it may be a bug, or we can try to convince them. Yes? Okay, so they do have some level of NatViz support, Andrew is saying for sure. It's just not 100%. Yep. NatViz. Okay, so this is, so NatViz is a sort of revamp of the old autoexp.nat file. He's asking about a particular formatting thing in that. I will send me an email, and I will put Eric in contact with you, our NatViz guy. Zach. Okay. Okay, so the feature request is make NatViz powerful enough that you could write a date time visualizer for it. Okay, check. So I would, the answer, okay, so the question is there any thought put into NatStep filters and handling them the same way we handle the NatViz files? Yeah, we've certainly thought about it. That's awesome. I didn't know people actually knew about NatStep filters. So we can definitely look at that going forward. It's great feedback.
Any non-NatViz questions?
You do these big efforts with, you know, all these developers, and it's the thing off on the side that everybody gets excited about. build tools, one developer, working for a few weeks, NatViz, one developer, yeah. Okay. Yes, it's Kostya. Yeah, we support, and I think in update one,
It's ARM and x86, and the plan is for update one that we actually add ARM 64 as well.
And the emulator is x86, but if you plug in, you know, I have an Android phone in this pocket and a Windows phone in this pocket. If you put the Android phone in there, it'll work for ARM. Or if you happen to have an x86 one, that'll work too. Yeah. Question.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to do that? Is another topic. So the question was CMake support, right? Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So we love CMake. CMake is an area that we're investigating, getting better at, for sure. That is on the list of, and because we're running out of time, I just want to stress one thing again. And so if you are interested in CMake, we want your email address. If you are interested in
Studio. The short answer is yes, we will do investments here.
Yeah.
We have some actually prototypes building, and we actually have some tools that actually do that CMake support. Right. We would love to get your email address, and we'll send it to you to try it out to give us feedback before we make it productized.
For instance, one thing that we're actually working on right now is the ability to make sure that when CMake spits out a Visual Studio project for CrossPlat, that it does it in the shared project form that I demonstrated instead of something flatter like it does today. So that's something that we'll be trying to give back. Yeah.
Yep.
But we want to do way more than that. So if you're interested in that, come grab us. We seriously want to build up customer councils for these things. And Linux IoT.
Okay. Being recorded, this session is over. So thank you all.